You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Just a quick acknowledgement that we are in our spring member drive. WPR makes a difference in your day. It keeps you connected with news and culture from nearby and far away. And it's members who make up the biggest share of WPR's funding. Make a gift today for the programs you count on for yourself, for the entire community. Here's that number to give. It's 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. And thank you so much for your support. Right now, we have the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families on the line. Emily Amundson is here. As we adhere to the Safer at Home order, the department says it's become more difficult to observe and report suspected cases of child abuse and neglect. And as such, it's seeing a decline in the number of reports from educators, from medical professionals, from other people in the lives of our children. So parents, what kind of state support do you need to keep your family whole right now and to keep children and health, safe and healthy at home? Join in at 800-642-1234. Secretary Amundson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. It's good to be back with you, Kate.
How has the pandemic changed the day-to-day operations for your department in the Department of Children and Families?
Yeah, it's been just a whirlwind over the past month, really taking a large organization like Department of Children and Families or really any state agency and thinking about how to make sure the folks that work for us are safe and are practicing social distancing and adhering to the safer at home. So that means a lot of virtual work taking place in an environment that wasn't particularly suited for that. We also have a lot of direct services. And so we've had to grapple over the last month on how do we provide direct services to the organizations that we work with, and how do we continue to provide excellent service to the children and families of Wisconsin in different modes, whether virtual or via phone. So in the wake of closing many of our buildings for walk-up service, we've had to make a lot of changes to our service models very quickly.
How do you deal with like at-home visits or checking up on cases?
Yes, that's been one of the biggest puzzles that we've had to solve. So we've been in near constant contact with counties throughout Wisconsin and their child protective services units, talking about different ways that you can check up on a family. And so using virtual technology whenever possible, but also doing that work the way that you would, but just observing the social distancing practices. So for example, in cases where a social worker really feels like, no, I need to get out to the house today. I need to check up on that kiddo. Bringing the kiddo outside, having a conversation through the door. These are ways that our social workers are continuing to serve their children and families. We're making every attempt to minimize the amount of face-to-face interaction that our social workers or that our child protective services workers have with families, because they can be carriers themselves, like a hummingbird going from family to family. And so we're really trying to limit those face-to-face visits for the times that they are most needed and rely on virtual technology, FaceTime, those kinds of things in cases where that's appropriate.
When you mention their direct services and walk-up services, what types of adjustments are you making there? What services are those?
Sure. So one of the biggest changes that we've had to make as a department, we closed our Milwaukee Child Care Authorization Service, which is it's in a big building in downtown Milwaukee, and it's where families can go to get assistance around food, around childcare, and around other things. So a lot of state agencies function out of that. When the Department of Administration made the decision to close walk-up service, we shifted all of our childcare authorizations to phone and internet, which had been used in the past, but not to the degree that we're using it now. So now very, very quickly, we were able to shift a large percentage of one of our teams over to support, you know, additional phone and internet service to provide those childcare authorizations, particularly in the wake of the school closings. And so that surge that people had in trying to find immediate childcare, if they were still, you know, if they were an essential worker, if they were reporting to work, we knew we needed to act quickly to be able to account for that surge. And we absolutely saw it in places like Milwaukee.
Have wait times been an issue in this new mode of service delivery?
So in the immediate days following the school closures, I would say in particular, wait times were a significant issue in urban areas. And that is why I would say state agencies worked basically around the clock to find nimble ways to reassign state workers to start to cut down on those wait times. And I'm proud to say that now our wait times are actually lower than they were in pre-COVID times. And it's because, again, we've reallocated a lot of staff to be able to provide those direct services.
We're talking with Emily Amundson. She's Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. You can join in. Are you a healthcare worker or an essential worker or someone else who still has to report to work? How have you been dealing with childcare? What resources are you relying on? Do your children still go to their daycare center? How is that going? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Secretary Amundson, last week, Governor Evers proposed funding and program changes to support child care providers and child welfare workers. What is in that proposal for child care?
Sure. So the governor's proposal, which is obviously something that we worked closely with him on, was really focused on how do we both keep the child care landscape healthy during this COVID-19? How do we help to keep that workforce protected during this time? But also, how do we keep them solvent so that they are here on the back end of this crisis when people are ready to restart their engines and go back to work? And so it's really, in the area of childcare, it's a dual puzzle of thinking about how do we provide funding right now for centers that are open but maybe have experienced a significant decline in the number of folks sending kids. Also with centers that are closed. We know that child care centers run on very, very, very razor-thin margins. And frankly, in a state like Wisconsin, where we've got 50% of our counties experiencing child care deserts right now, we're very worried about the impact that the COVID-19 crisis will have on the solvency of centers' ability to continue to serve families after this crisis is over. And so really the package looks at providing grant funding for things like hazard pay for centers that are still open, and flexible funding to procure things like personal protective equipment, cleaning supplies, things like that. It also looks to subsidize centers that are closed and subsidize a portion of the revenue that they would have been getting if they were open, and that would be to keep the market strong and healthy, potentially pay workforce moving forward. And then another significant piece of that puzzle is also trying to provide grants to largely new centers that are providing care to the children of essential workforce, and particularly healthcare workforce. So we've had a number, we think about 50 emergency child care centers spring up across the state to help to provide that critical care for children of those first responders in that emergency workforce. And so those
is that enough, do you think, right now for that workforce?
We believe that it is. We've worked over the last month to stand up a matching system that we've never had in Wisconsin before, and this is something we're really proud of. We've been able to identify who is still open in the state of Wisconsin, how many spots they might have available for children. And we actually provide a matching service that matches families with available spots. And I think based on our data, we're seeing that in those hot spots that are close to hospitals, these emergency care centers have been really critical to making sure that families have what they need. But outstate, there are a lot of spots available for first responders. And that's a good thing, frankly, because that means that centers are operating at less than capacity, which means that children and families are safer.
We have the Secretary of DCF, Department of Children and Families, Emily Amundson, with us as we look at the resources around child safety and welfare during this pandemic. With you, are you a healthcare worker or someone else who is reporting to work? How you've been dealing with this crisis and childcare? Does your child go to their same daycare? How is it going? How are they feeling? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking with the Secretary of DCF, the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. Emily Amundson is here, stays with us as we look at services supporting children and families during this difficult time. Do you make child support payments? Maybe you're a foster care family. Perhaps you run a program for homeless youth. What are your specific concerns during this troubling time? Join in at any point in the area of children and families. We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And Secretary Amundson stays with us. Secretary, the child support payment system filters through your department. What happens to families who are losing their jobs, losing their work, and may not be able to make their child support payments?
Yeah, this is a difficult time for a lot of families. I think that, you know, the child support process is moving along. You know, there have been some flexibilities from the federal government. And I think that, you know, child support is an area that is going to continue to be looked at from, you know, from the federal perspective. It's a program that is highly governed by federal law. So here in our state, we'll continue to administer the program with the direction from the federal government. But I know our folks at the department are advocating for as much flexibility right now as we possibly can achieve.
So you're really looking at almost like a case-by-case basis in terms of what needs to happen to a particular family?
That's right.
Well, let's take a call now. Anthony is joining us from Fond du Lac this morning. Hi, Anthony.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The reason I'm calling is I'm a government employee, and it seems that there seems to be a break in communication. If I go to the some of the federal website information that we can find, it says all federal employees will be given 2 weeks of sick leave. Well, I've already used 100 hours of sick leave because I've been off of work for 5 weeks, most of that time working from home. But the guidance we're given is if we have a child that we need to take care of, like teaching second grade school, following his curriculum, I'm having to use my sick leave to use that, and I've already used 100 hours. Our management, they have no updates when we're getting this leave, so now, because I've used all my sick leave, I refuse to use all the leave that I finally just got, my annual leave, so we're having to send our child to back daycare, which we pulled him out of, to stay away from other people. And now we're having to send him back to that daycare, which now all the healthcare workers for the local hospital, that's where most of their children are going for that specific hospital.
Anthony, yeah, thank you for bringing us your situation. Secretary Amundson, what can you see there in terms of what type of leave families can take right now?
Sure. Yeah, so there are a number of different new leave programs that have been granted by the federal government and that we're still trying to grapple with at the state level. I would say that, you know, from agency to agency, there may be unique or particular nuances to this, but I think in this time, what I'm saying certainly to my staff is we need to be as flexible as possible. And we need to expect, I mean, frankly, my children are downstairs right now, you know, as they have been for the last month. We need to expect that people are grappling with how to provide care to their own families while at the same time trying to do the best they can to provide services, you know, as government employees to the folks of Wisconsin. And so I would say to the caller that I would advise the caller to have a conversation with supervisor. I don't know what the gentleman's particular situation is, but to have a conversation with supervisor about the need to balance those two things. From the child care standpoint, I understand that it's a difficult conundrum to think about when is the right time to send your child back to center-based care. I would want to highlight again the matching service that we do provide through through the state. And as a government employee, we would provide that matching service because government employees are critical or essential workforce. And so if the gentleman is uncomfortable with the current placement of his child because of the you know, potential increased risk of the children of healthcare workers, we might look at some other options to either provide care in home or to provide care at another center that may be open nearby. So those would be a couple of first steps that I would think about taking.
Anthony, does that help with first steps?
It does a little bit. I've already talked to my immediate management. It just seems there's a vast disconnect from what's going out from high above versus down to, I guess you would say, street level.
Yeah. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for the call. Good luck with those conversations. Secretary, I want to switch gears here for a moment and look at abuse. Last month, your department saw suspected child abuse and neglect reports decline about by 50%. What are some reasons going on for the decline in the number of reports?
Sure. Yeah. So we frankly, we expected this to happen as we went to Safer at Home, because really our educator workforce as mandated reporters far and away provide the, you know, more CPS reports or more reports of suspected abuse and neglect than any other sector, followed with social workers, with law enforcement, and with our medical community. And so when you think about all of those mandated reporters and what they've been grappling with over the last month, you know, going to Safer at Home, fewer eyes on kids, but also really dealing with some significant pieces of the COVID-19 crisis, you know, those reports are going to go down. And so the good news about what we're seeing in our data over the last 2 weeks is as we are seeing educators get more versed in how to provide virtual schooling and how to connect with families virtually, we're starting to see those numbers go back up. And right now we're at basically what we would expect to see in the summertime from our mandated reporters.
Oh, because in the summertime there is that less contact with students. Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think what we're doing this month happens to be Child Abuse Neglect Prevention Month. We're really spending some time getting out some materials, trying to get out on the radio and onto TV to say what communities can do when there are less eyes on kids. And from my perspective, it just means checking up on your friends and your neighbors. One of the other good news pieces of the decline that we've seen is we have not seen a decline in the number of reports from family, from community, from friends and neighbors during this time. And so the good news is people know who they need to be connecting with. And I would encourage everybody to think about who is that family that I want to check in on during this time. Not necessarily because I think that there's an abuse and neglect situation, but because they may be vulnerable or insecure and in some way, and they may need a helping hand right now. And so I think this speaks a lot, our data at least speaks a lot to the willingness for friends and neighbors to provide that kind of support.
How are you checking in at this time with foster families, foster care system?
Sure. So we've spent a lot of time reaching out to the foster care system through our counties, and then also, you know, the group homes, the residential care centers, the places where kids go when they're not placed in foster care. Obviously, this is an incredibly difficult time to grapple with becoming a foster parent because there's a lot of unknowns about, you know, exposure and, you know, and contact tracing and all of that. So we've been working with through counties, brainstorming with public health and others about how we can start to use kind of our COVID universe, the folks in our communities who are willing to take children, even if they have been COVID exposed, folks who may have experienced COVID-19 already, who are also foster families. So all of these conversations are taking place. And frankly, we're doing a lot of disaster planning, a lot of worst case scenario planning, because at the end of the day, we need to make sure that every single kid in Wisconsin has a safe and secure place to be.
And within that COVID universe, there are also homeless and really vulnerable youth. How are you making sure that they just don't disappear, that you're keeping in touch with those types of children?
Yes. DOJ put out a really nice messaging piece about a week or two ago on this piece, the increased vulnerability and the increased risk, particularly of sex trafficking during this time. Again, when there are less adults with eyes on children, you know, those vulnerable youth are even more vulnerable. We are really working. What we've seen is the contracted partners that we work with to provide services for homeless youth have really shifted their service models to doing things like providing meals, doing home visits, and doing those personal checkups on vulnerable kids. So just shifting those service models is one way to do this work.
Secretary Amundson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Emily Amundson is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. If you know someone who is experiencing child abuse, we have a link to how to report it on WPR.org/mornings. Coming up, we have the DOA Secretary back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. I just want to put it out there that Wisconsin Public Radio is in our spring member drive, and your gift right now supports the morning show. It supports all the other WPR programs you rely on today and every single day. So join in with your gift now. That number is 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. And thank you for your support. Right now, we have the Secretary of the Department of Administration, Joel Brennan, on the line. And I have to level with you, our show has made a concerted effort to hear from every single one of Governor Evers' 16 cabinet secretaries and allow you to field questions to them. Some secretaries we've heard on multiple times, and we have one left. I have to say it, Insurance Commissioner Mark Affably, you will hear from us. We'll save the best for last, how about? So today, though, we're in the DOA, the Department of Administration, which has a bunch of roles, including helping the governor craft and carry out a state budget. What do you want to know about the inner workings of the budget process in the DOA? We're at 800-642-1234. Joel Brennan is the Secretary of the Department of Administration. He formerly served as CEO of Discovery World in Milwaukee since 2007. Secretary Brennan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Kate, it's a pleasure to join you.
So
I take no offense at being one of the last, so I just want you to know that.
All right, fair enough. But what is your department's primary function during this crisis? Because you have your feelers and so many things.
Yeah, well, as you said, the department has a wide range of things that we do. One of the biggest things is we really are the human resources infrastructure for all of state government. So there are about 35,000 state employees, and a big role that we have had is how do we transition the lion's share of those employees to be able to work remotely, to continue the work that they're doing, important work for the state, but to do it largely at home. We manage all the buildings and the fleet for the state. As you said, we do the state budget. We do a lot of programs related to low-income energy assistance. We regulate the Indian gaming throughout the state, and we do a lot of work with the IT infrastructure. So all of those things, as is the case in every corner of Wisconsin, all of those things have had some impact from COVID-19. And a lot of what we have done is to try to support the infrastructure that's been set up through the Department of Health Services, through Wisconsin Emergency Management, to ensure that the state's emergency response to this can be as effective as possible. So that takes a wide variety of roles and a wide variety of stretching people in directions maybe that they never dreamed of even just a few months ago.
I can't imagine how making priorities and shifting priorities must be a huge challenge for you. How much of the agency's normal services get backburnered right now to really focus on the coronavirus-related duties and the emergency work that needs to take precedence?
Yeah, well, I can tell you that a good number of the high-level staff at the Department of Administration have been kind of sucked into the State Emergency Operations Center and are doing work there, which is, I'm proud of that. And people across the state ought to be proud that this is a time when people who are in state service are kind of, they're being called and they're rising to the occasion. And so a lot of that work, a lot of the infrastructure that we have in the department is being moved over. Just in the last several days, 25 employees who work across different divisions within the Department of Administration have become part of the state's infrastructure for contact tracing, for, you know, looking at people who are diagnosed with COVID-19 and where is that spread, and how can we ensure that any of that spread is as limited as possible. And as you have seen in the last several days, we're making progress. The Safer at Home effort that's been underway now for several weeks has had some very positive influence and positive impact, but we also have to continue that, and we have to be very aggressive in doing that. And that's a role that not only state government is playing, but local elected officials and people in their own homes are playing to ensure that we're doing everything that we can across the state.
Do those 25 employees have the public health skills, the translatable skills that could be help them be those contact tracers?
Well, what those people have are the ability to be well-organized, the ability to take good direction, and to be quickly trained in this kind of in the work that's happening. So a lot of what's happening when someone gets diagnosed with COVID-19, a lot of the work that needs to happen is to, you know, see who they have been around in the last several weeks, who potentially could have been exposed, to ensure those people are aware of that. So in some ways, it's a communications role as much as it is a public health role, but it's led by the Department of Health Services, and these people are being managed by the health experts in the state and the emergency management experts to ensure that we are getting absolutely everything that we can out of the people who are in state service. So I think, and these are just a smattering of the hundreds, if not and thousands, of people who are working across the administration, but also working at other levels of government, the first responders. You know, this is an all hands on deck effort to fight what really amounts to an invisible enemy. And I think people are really rising to that occasion.
Your department manages technology for other state agencies. We've been seeing really stressed out technology because of the demand for services and all services moving online. Where are you seeing some breakdowns, and what are you doing for that?
Well, first of all, I guess I'm proud of the fact that we were able to, in a very short order, move from the ability of having 5 or 10,000 people be able to do most of their work remotely to about 30,000 in very short order. But as you say, there are things that have been stressed, most notably the infrastructure related to unemployment insurance and unemployment compensation. Not only in Wisconsin, but in other states, there has been huge stress that's been put on that. And it's been almost a daily effort to try to ensure that, that the infrastructure there is sound and that it can hold up to the demand that it's gotten. And I think after some initial challenges, and any time you get, you know, there were days where we were getting 24, I think the highest was about 24 or 25,000 claims. That started to settle just a little bit. But for each one of those people, it's an absolutely critical thing that they get to be able to do this. Luckily, we can do a lot of that online, and we've created and improved the infrastructure to be able to do that. We're increasing the number of people who can take phone calls and have personal responses to people who are doing that. Plus, we're also integrating and doing everything we can, and the state legislature now is finally acting to ensure that we can make sure that we're getting all of the resources that are available to people in the state of Wisconsin from the federal level. So it's been working. In a perfect world, we would have had a lot more time and a lot more investment in infrastructure over the last several years and in the last administration to be able to deal with this. But I'm proud of the fact that we've been able to do as much as we can and really be responsive to the needs of the people in the state of Wisconsin.
We're talking with the Secretary for the State Department of Administration. Joel Brennan is with us, and you can join in with your questions about the DOA. What do you want to know about the state budget process, or what questions do you have about the functions of one of state government's largest agencies? Join in at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Secretary Brennan, let's look at construction for a moment. How has the coronavirus affected construction and building projects that were underway before the stay-at-home order was issued?
Well, there are some things that we have decided and for good reason have been moved aside. So, for instance, there were projects that were being done at some of the state healthcare facilities or some of the state prisons. There are 37 different correctional facilities, and there's work that was underway in those places. But the last thing we need to do in places like that is to be bringing additional contractors on site in places like the correctional facilities or healthcare facilities. So some of those things have been modified for the time being. Other projects have continued to move forward. You know, one of the benefits of this, one of the silver linings, you know, if you can find silver linings of these things, is there are empty buildings in other places where there can be work that can go on unabated. Now, every construction project that's still happening has to include, and every contractor still has to ensure that they're doing the social distancing and doing all the things that are necessary to stop the spread of this. But there is still work going on. One of the things I think we're also proud of is that building projects and the way building projects have been bid and things like that have changed really on the fly. There has been telebidding that has happened, and you know, people who are used to doing things and showing up in person have gone to moving all that online. And we've been able to do that in some ways without missing a beat. And I think that's a credit to the industry and the way that they've been able to modify, but also a credit to the people who work on that at the state level to be able to, you know, change direction in very short order and be able to do those things kind of on the fly.
Are contractors able to get the supplies they need to continue these projects if they are able to work in a building that has no people in it?
In the near term, it seems as if they have, but I think there is, you know, we're dealing with the most immediate aspects here, and there will be long-term repercussions of all this too. You know, there are important construction projects. Like, I just had the opportunity yesterday to visit State Fair Park in Milwaukee, the Expo Center, where they're building an alternative care facility, and the unbelievable amount of integration from the federal level through the Army Corps of Engineers to the state, to the contractors who are working on that project. It's amazing what they have been able to do in the course of 10 or 11 days that would take months to do at other times. And it's a testament to the ability of people to work together and the ability of people in times of need to truly kind of put everything else aside for the good of the state of Wisconsin.
So is there an open date on that?
It expects to be open within about a week or 10 days, but the construction aspect of it will be completed in very short order, really by the end of this week. And so it's amazing the work that has happened and the timeline that they've been able to operate under.
We have Department of Administration Secretary Joel Brennan on the line taking your questions about a range of things his department touches: budgeting, HR, construction, IT. We're talking about bidding. What questions do you have? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Right now we're talking with the Secretary of the Department of Administration, Joel Brennan, is here. The department has a pretty nondescript name, and apparently there's this inside joke that it's known as the Department of All because of its wide scope and its reach. Are you confused about what falls under the DOA umbrella? Do you have questions about budget, IT, or how state buildings or contracts or bidding procurement process works? Bring it on, 800-642-1234, and Secretary Brennan stays with us. Secretary, I hope I didn't misspeak there on the Department of All. Is that true?
It does have that characterization sometimes, simply because we don't have a distinct constituency. Our constituency really is everybody else in state government, all the other agencies, the governor's office, the legislature. So there is a wide range of those. But we've joked within the department, some of us call it the Department of Awesome. You know, there can be lots of different names for it. But at this time, you know, I mean, that's just a little bit of a joke. But I think at this time, the most important thing is that we're part of the effort that is kind of this all hands on deck effort led by the Department of Health Services in the public health emergency that we're doing now. And we have to take every angle and every opportunity, every asset that we have, and just to make sure that we're doing it and applying it to the current problem.
Well, let's look at legislation here for a moment and the relief package on deck. The governor and Republican leaders are proposing different legislation to help people through this time. What legislation do you think needs to be brought forth first?
Well, the legislature took a step forward yesterday because the assembly passed a bill yesterday. The Senate will be in today. And there are things in that package that the governor has been talking about for more than a month. Very important things like the waiver of the 1 week waiting period for people to get unemployment compensation. And about 2 weeks ago, Wisconsin was one of 40 states that had that. As of a few days ago, there were eight, maybe less than eight, that were in that. And Wisconsin was one of the last. And so the governor has been calling for a month for that to be waived so that people who absolutely need these resources immediately can get them. And so that's in that package. There is the ability for us to access additional federal money through the Federal Medical Assistance Program that will bring in about $150 million a quarter in additional federal money that the state will be able to gain between now and the end of the year. So those are really important steps, and that's part of the reason why the Assembly passed it like 97-2. And so there was broad bipartisan agreement. Some of the things that are not in there that I think are absolutely going to have to be addressed in the future are direct resources to the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation for the small businesses that are hurting. And there are resources that are going to be needed to be deployed on those things. Areas for child care providers and direct assistance for local communities. All of those things are things I think that we may need to come back on in the future. And I hope that the legislature doesn't believe that they're done. They're working in a different way than they have, but they're going to be required to continue to work with the governor and with our administration to ensure that we keep doing these things as long as is necessary. One of the most important things about that action is we're able to now access some of those federal resources that are coming, and Wisconsin needs to be as flexible and as aggressive as we can be to deploy those resources. So that's one area that we're working, our state budget office, the governor's office is working on, to ensure that as those federal resources through the CARES Act become available, we're able to deploy those absolutely as quickly as possible on the ground in the state of Wisconsin.
Let's shift here to look at Foxconn for a moment. There's a report that says that it hit its hiring mark in 2019 to qualify for millions of dollars in state subsidies. What still needs to happen for Foxconn to get those subsidies?
Well, there was an April 1st deadline that Foxconn had to submit reports to the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. They submitted those, I think, on either March 31st or April 1st. The process that now happens is that those get turned over to a third party to look through and compare against the requirements. And that process takes several weeks. And then the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation staff looks at and cross-checks those. And so I think through this time, the most important thing is that there's a process that was laid out in the contract with Foxconn that was signed almost 3 years ago. And that process is being followed by WEDC. And, you know, when they get to the end of that process, there'll be the ability for us to look and see where Foxconn is going. I have been heartened by Foxconn raising their hand in whatever way they can in the state of Wisconsin to try to assist and to offer their assistance. And it's important that every employer in the state do everything that they can right now. But in terms of the contract and where we're going with the credits, there'll be a time for more communication about that. But for right now, there's a process that's underway, and that process is happening. And that's the third party doing that assessment is the first step in that.
And really quickly on that note, there's been talk that the plant may be used to make medical equipment by the manufacturer Medtronic to make ventilators. Do you know anything about that, about what is gaining traction there for that plant?
No, I don't know. Okay. More than just the brief conversations we've had about that and the reports that have been in the press about that alliance and that potential allegiance. But okay. Absolutely, you know, as is necessary everywhere around the country, whoever can deploy resources in the manufacture of ventilators and the manufacture of personal protection equipment, all of those things, it's an all hands on deck effort. So whoever can be part of those things, I think we should, in whatever way we can, give them incentive to do that.
Talking with Joel Brennan, Secretary for the State Department of Administration, looking at the roles that the DOA has in the face of this pandemic. Let's take a call now. Leona is in Madison this morning. Hi, Leona.
Hi. I have a situation that about the taxes, and I was informed, or everybody was informed, that the taxes can be done by July the 15th. Problem is, you know, a lot of the offices, you cannot go directly into them, and I'm missing a form. So I don't know what to do and who to contact. Please help me.
Leona, thank you for that call. Secretary Brennan, what about filing taxes right now?
Yeah, so Leona is correct that both at the federal level, and we've modeled it at the state level, today's April 15th tax deadline is pushed to July 15th. People still are working at the Department of Revenue. If I can get Leona's contact information, I will connect her directly with the Department of Revenue. If she's missing a state form, she can also, there are, while most people are working remotely, a lot of people at the Department of Revenue are still doing work, and they're making sure that they can be, that they can service constituents as much as possible. So they are doing in-person appointments and doing things by appointment, even in state office buildings that are closed. So if there's a state form that she's missing and she can't access it online, there should be, and there are people who are available to answer those calls and who are providing whatever is necessary service to ensure that we continue to do the work that's necessary at the state level.
Before we let you go here, let's look at PPE and the difficulty in procuring personal protective equipment. Who are you getting the equipment for? How is that process going in procuring these essential things?
Well, I can tell you that inside the State Emergency Operations Center, and I'm proud to say these are people who also work within the Department of Administration in our overall procurement effort, but there are people who are working the phones, who are working with local buyers, who are working nationally and internationally, and also working with a collaboration of Midwestern states. So trying to increase the buying power by aligning with Minnesota, Illinois, Michigan, others, so that the volume of order that we're having is something that can be taken seriously, because as I think everybody is aware, lots of the personal protection equipment is coming from overseas. Lots of it is manufactured in China. And so there is work that's going on every day. I think there's been we have had success in some fashion in those areas, but it continues to be one of the big strains. There needs to be more PPE. There needs to be a dramatic expansion of testing in the state of Wisconsin and across the nation. And those are just a few of the aspects that are necessary in order to make sure that we're attacking this public health emergency on every level possible.
Secretary Brennan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me, Kate. I appreciate it.
Joel Brennan, Secretary for the State Department of Administration. Just ahead, we'll bring in a few reporters to discuss how the pandemic is shaking up the sports world. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.